says?
Psalm 22.
The Psalm?
Pain is
the 12th labor of Hercules is a. The 22nd psalm is about the 12th labor of Hercules. The idea of death, well, the idea of death isn't bad. Experiencing death while you are yet alive is beyond. In Abraham, in Genesis, it's called the horror of great darkness. It's the time for you that you must go through on the desert when you're totally alone. It's the 119th Psalm. There is absolutely no one in this world. There is no one in heaven. And there is no possibility of one in this world or one in heaven that there is any relationship to or with. Death meaning total separation. The human race spends its life, its time upon the face of the earth in partial separation, in quiet desperation, the poets have said. And they run to periodic islands to try to have a feeling of, I'm not really alone. The 12th labor of Hercules, the 22nd psalm, the experience that must be repeated in you is this: facing your aloneness once and for all time. Ed has spent his whole life in partial aloneness, never quite getting it. And so therefore there's neither despair nor joy. There's only the quiet agony of the middle ground, the slow death of imagined. Rex has been going through this on a more concentrated basis for the last few months. Lee saw it in all its evil intensity Monday night. Rick runs from it. He's the doodle bug running from rock to rock to rock to rock and then making jokes in between to avoid the aloneness. Were you comforting Pete before I said anything? Pete's like Ed. A lifetime of slow death, slow agony, because of the fear of confronting the aloneness. So it's always and I could pick on all of you, but that's enough. I want you to experience tonight this 12th labor of Hercules, to see Psalm 22. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? That's a statement of courage. Because Well, I'm a real bastard. I mean, I'm sure Stealth is convinced. The people in Stealth are convinced I'm the worst bastard in the history of the known universe. Because I push them and push you to the confrontation of your own terrible aloneness. So that you must, if you're going to stick around here, you must, even if you don't have the innate courage, that you'll get kicked in the ass enough times so that you face it. You're alone. You're hopeless. There's no way that you're ever going to get anything other than that. You'll never have any joy by your understanding. You'll never have any life by you trying to figure it out. You're going to grow old and die alone and be buried, and that's all. Your dreams, your hopes, your ambitions are nothing. All your feeble attempts to get it right, all of your feeble little efforts to be friends, and all of your feeble efforts at compassion and doing the right thing and being nice and having this nice little career and playing the game right, they're all a joke. You go to sleep in your aloneness, you will die in your aloneness. And you will die in your death. No more gimmicks. No more coming to Bible study to avoid aloneness. No more trying to get it right. Face your aloneness, your death, and cry out to God and say, "Why have you forsaken me? I'm alone. Forever." Finally, then, if Christ isn't resurrected in you, you're just going to wither away forever. But you got to know it. You got to have the courage to face that phenomenon. Amen? So my God, why hast thou forsaken me, is the most courageous, are the most courageous words ever spoken. Because if we were in that position, we would read some kind of a prayer where it says, "He'll never leave me nor forsake me," and then we'd hold our hat to that intellectual graven image. There's no experience. Understand? My God, why have you forsaken me? Brethren, why have you forsaken me? Husbands, wives, friends, why have you forsaken? Why? I'm tired of playing the game. Jobs, careers, why have you forsaken? You know, this is pushing a few buttons tonight, but you'll forget it. Go on tomorrow, having more phony little alliances and game playing to convince yourself that you're not forsaken, and convince yourself you have the possibility of getting it right in the future. Don't do that anymore. Am I communicating with anyone? My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Why art thou so far from helping me and from the words of my groaning? But you see, your groaning is the It's the groaning of someone in perfect pain. I know a great deal about perfect pain. It's the pain that does not permit you to even complete a sentence in your mind. And it's I remember screaming in Wentwood, you know, they were having Bible study in the other room, and I'm in the back room groaning. Well, all I was a reflection of you. Groaning. But you've got it so covered over with plastic. So many little devices. So many little compulsions to convince you that you're not alone. So many little escape mechanisms. So many television programs, so much music, so much opera, so much whatever it is, so many dramas to convince you that you're not in that state of groaning, to convince you that you do not need the courage to cry out and say, "Why have you forsaken me?" Oh my God, I cry in the daytime, but thou hearest not, and in the night season, and I'm not silent. I never stop. If you have ears to hear and you walk around downtown Dallas and you see, or a shopping center or a store, if you had the ears to hear, that's all you would be hearing. No matter what the look was, no matter what the outside makeup was, you would hear each of those vessels crying, crying, crying night and day. That's all they're doing. Are you okay? But thou art holy, O thou that inhabitest the praises of Israel. Our fathers trusted in thee, they trusted, and thou didst deliver them. They cried unto thee and were delivered. They trusted in thee and were not confounded. But I am a worm and no man, a reproach of men and despised of the people. All they that see me laugh me to scorn. They shoot out the lip. They shake the head, saying, now remember, these are the words of Christ. This is the prayer of Christ. This is your Savior saying these things. He trusted in the Lord that he would deliver him. Let him deliver him, seeing he delighted in him. That's exact words. The Pharisees cried out and said that on the cross. But they're saying it now. Your Pharisaical mind is mocking constantly. Am I communicating? But thou art he that took me out of the womb. Thou didst make me hope when I was upon my mother's breasts. This is the real you now. This goes back and forth. One of the greatest things that can happen to you is when you meet you. Most of you have never met you. What?
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
I was cast upon thee from the womb. Thou art my God from my mother's belly. Be not far from me, for trouble is near, for there is none to help. Many bulls have compassed me. Strong bulls of Bashan have beset me round. They gaped upon me with their mouths as a ravening and roaring lion. I am poured out like water, and all my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax. It is melted in the midst of my bowels. My strength is dried up like a potsherd. and my tongue cleaveth to my jaws. Thou hast brought me into the dust of death. For dogs have compassed me, the assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. Now, the dog, or the dogs, it's really one dog. The dog has 50 heads, according to myth. According to the Greeks, it had 3 heads. But this is the dog that's the guardian of hell. He has 50 heads. It's called Cerberus, Cerberus. Cerberus. Now, the 12th labor of Hercules is Hercules going, and there was no thing in the universe that wasn't afraid, including Zeus, by the way, that wasn't afraid of Cerberus. It was a huge, monstrous, evil, perfectly evil dog that was the guardian of the gates of hell. And Hercules, we'll study in great detail, went down, battled with this dog, brought him up, showed him the light of day, and then threw him back down, or brought him back down. Now, that's the 12th labor of Hercules.
In a nutshell.
Yeah, but before he could do the 12th labor of Hercules, he had to be initiated into the secret, mystical, Eleusinian rites.
The blame from rain.
This would be an awful take.
Plague of blame.
Once every 5 years on the plains of Eleusinian, or Eleusius, I can't ever pronounce that. The very, very, very selected people, selected ones, were taken into initiatory rites. And Hercules had to complete that initiation before he could go to battle with this dog from hell. And so the initiates, I mean, think of the highest thing that you can think of in terms of an honor in this society, a Congressional Medal of Honor probably, or some kind of Rhodes Fellowship or Rhodes Scholarship or something. But that paled. I mean, it was in Greek myth or in Greek society, to be selected to be in these mysteries, to be an initiate into these mysteries, was 10 orders of magnitude higher than anything that we have in our society. And Hercules had to go through these before he could do the battle with this Cerberus. We're not ready to study the Eleusinian mysteries, so because you don't know you can't be initiated until you empathize your aloneness. Revelation 12. if in reality, if the foundation thing that I teach, that it's finished and that the New Jerusalem is our overriding reality, is true, then its counterfeit is also true, namely that the overriding reality of hell is also available. That if everything is Jerusalem, wherever your foot touches is the promise, then right outside of the east gate is the dump of Jerusalem called Gehenna. You're caught, the world is caught between these two realities, the reality of Gehenna as their permanent abode and the reality of the New Jerusalem that's available if they just turn. You don't want to see either one, because Gehenna will scare the shit out of you and the New Jerusalem will cost you your life. So you're walking in a very guarded way so that you can't see either one of them, and that's a condition of the human race. It's not optional. I mean, all philosophies, all psychology, all thought, all theory is a way in which you can keep your eyes from either one of those two positions. Do you understand? Now, chapter 12, verse 5. When God looks at us, he doesn't look at us as individuals. He looks at us and sees a body, a bride. The ancients called it the lower matrona and the upper matrona. And the purpose of preaching is to have those two meet so that you see this mystery. You never again see at, you only see through. You never see at circumstances. Lee called me today and was all upset because something I said to her, that she had never experienced pain, she'd only experienced shame. And if she hadn't experienced pain, that means then compassion was impossible. And so I said, so what? That's then, this is now. Now your life is Christ, period. You don't have a right to consider yourself ever again. But you can't get there from here. You can't get to the one unless you see the other. In verse 5, she brought forth a man-child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up into God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. Now, that's we'll get into that number mystery later on, but trust me in this, that's all that time and space are, is this wilderness. And there was a war in heaven. If there's a war in heaven, there's a war in you. It's not external to you. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. And the dragon fought and his angels. Now, we learned from that Joseph Campbell myth series that in myth, the dragon is always that which represents what you are trying to protect. It's the beast within you trying to protect. In the mythology, it's you're trying to protect gold and virginity, or gold and some image. It comes and the dragon comes out of the sea. The sea is your subconscious mind. The dragon is here. The sea is your unconsciousness. Can't see it. It's below the surface of the sea. The dragon just sticks his head up every once in a while. Well, when you have a hot seat, all it is battle with that dragon. Now, the dragon has several heads. That's the problem. You have to kill each of the heads. You any better? All right. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought against his angels and prevailed not. Neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. He deceiveth the whole world. That means there's not a place in the world that he hasn't succeeded in deceiving. Now, what is the deception? And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now is come salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil has come down unto you, having great wrath, because he knoweth he hath but a short time. If your dwelling is in earth or on earth, you're in deep shit, and it's going to get worse. Your dwelling is permanently on the mercy seat. The deception that he has deceived the whole world is that anyone is separate from God. You understand? The separateness from God is what's called death. Now, the mystery is you have to know the fullness of the reason that deception occurs is because if there is separateness, then you can have independent righteousness. You can be your own God. You can get it right. You can think you can do something about it. You can get it right tomorrow. You can get it right if you change circumstances. If you do and modify things a little bit, you can be right. Well, that if you can be right, then you can be wrong. And so wrong is just the flip side of right. It is just a stupid game. You don't have to play that game anymore. But before you cannot stop, before you can stop playing that game, you have to know what game you're playing. Now, the game is that you must see the futility of that separate self, that separate identity. You have to see the fruit. You have to see the condition of this independent self so that the resurrected life can be revealed, which is never separate. Now, you know, we've gone through this so often it's getting nauseous, but you've spent a lifetime trying to convince yourself you're not separate from something. That's what, you know, that's the basis of what people call ambition, and you've spent a lifetime trying to get it right. There's no one that isn't in that position. Now, let's let the process go. Let's go to the fullness of what it means so that we can say with Christ, my God, why have you forsaken me? All right? What's going on? Something over here.
Well, just now when you said that, I was thinking about what happened to me the other morning. When I woke up and I take the thing to bitch about and say that it was wrong, and for the first time ever, I wasn't able to stop it at that one thing that was wrong and play with that. It got away from me, and it just dominated. To 5 things were wrong, 10 things were wrong, 20 things were wrong. Everything, suddenly everything was wrong. And in that state, there was just nothing to do. But I think I stopped it short. I think even when it went that far, I think I stopped it short. I think I got scared and I stopped it short. Until just now, I didn't think that I did. But I think I stopped it short.
I promise you, you stopped it short. The world, your world, the good parts of it, the bad parts of it, this Bible study, everything in the world is a network of dominion and compulsion, and you're caught in it. It's like the largest spider web in history, and you get free from one strand and you're caught in another. I mean, it doesn't matter whether you call that web church or Bible study or Trinity Foundation. It doesn't matter if the one you're afraid of is your boss or Hitler or the Antichrist or Oli. The point is, you're in this web of compulsion, manipulation.
Yeah, like when I didn't have a job, I was upset because I felt like I was wasting my time and money was always tight. Then I got a job and I didn't like my life because I didn't have any time and I was doing something I didn't like. So it's like, you know, wrestle free from one to get caught on the other.
Yeah.
It's just constant dodge.
Mm-hmm. You know, you just jump from web to web. You know. You know, or this will be a better boyfriend, or this will be a better girlfriend, or this will be a better wife, or this will be a better husband, or this will be a better place, or this will be a better that. It's like, it's like this web, it's got all kinds of sticky, infinite number of sticky threads on it, and you spend a lifetime, you jump for one and you hang on to it for a while, and you can see, you can sense that it's breaking after a while. You can just feel it starting to, the rope or the web is breaking, and so you jump to the next one. And that starts to break, and you jump to the next one. I mean, that's all you've done. Mm-hmm. It's all the world has done. It's all anybody in the world has ever done. Yeah, it's all a process to avoid, in this metaphor, falling through the web. The web is simultaneously the thing that you are caught in and your protection. That's why it's so subtle. And it's universal. There's nothing in time and space, not Bible stuff, not God stuff, not Trinity Foundation stuff, not talk shows, not forums, not lack of forums, not nothing isn't part of that web. You know, Harry's web was Coca-Cola, and then he jumped from Coca-Cola to Dr. Pepper, and he jumped from Dr. Pepper to Brimstone, and he jumped from Brimstone to Trinity. But he's still on the web.
Yeah, I can really feel that tonight. I think part of it is, it's been, what, 4 years now, 5 years, something like that, of sitting around here trying to make something happen, and now it's finally happened, and it's like, I mean, at a gut level, it's like, so what?
Yeah, because
Christmas came and it's not.
Yeah, but the only, I promise you something, the only thing that will result in causing you joy, and it's the last thing that you'd ever expect it, and that's to cause, to be a party to someone else believing. It's the only thing that will cause joy. Everything else will be nothing. Stuff. Now.
You know, I just said, okay, so now it looks like you got a show. So what? Then you say that, and when you say that, I see. I see she.
Yeah. Well, effectively, look at it back further. You know, you see Daryl, you see Rick, you see Pete. I mean, nobody, I mean, that's where it started. Well, but anyway, this self that needs to hold on to those strands is a strange beast. I mean, it's really strange. Because it loves prison. It loves the, you know, when it happens in the natural, when people are habitual criminals, pretty soon they feel their world is behind bars, and they've developed a social order and a structure to permit them comfort. And if they, whenever they're paroled or whenever they're free, and if they've served their sentence, they go out and do something dumb so they can get behind bars again. Well, you're the same. Now, yeah, that's enough on that subject. Now, these the things that cause you to keep jumping, or doodlebugging, or jumping from web to web, or compulsions, and they're the molding process of this false self. And those compulsions always need ongoing and increasing affirmation. How am I perceived by the world? How am I perceived? How am I perceived? That's why throughout the New Testament, Christ said, it says that many believed on him, but they love the praise of God more than the praise of men more than the praise of God. All that means is that the compulsions and the affirmations that were necessary for them to think that they were getting it right somehow ended up being an enemy of pure faith. You understand? You understand if it was just me and none of you, nobody else was here? Nobody, I mean, you understand that there's a thing that happens within you that because there are more, because somebody's been here for 15 years, that in your mind gives the words that I say legitimacy to you? These compulsions, then in the aloneness, they reveal themselves to you in sneaky ways. And the lurking fear of failing is always there. It's a lurking fear of failing.
Lurking. Holding your hand in your face.
And the steady urge to prevent this by gathering more work, more money, more friends, more people in the Bible study. More. Now, the compulsions we talked about the other night are the two main enemies of spiritual life: anger and greed. Anger is your impulsive response to the experience of being deprived. The instant you feel deprived, you get angry. When your self depends on what others say of you, then anger is the natural reaction to a critical world. It's explosive, unconscious. Now, anger internalized is depression. It's the same. Anger externalized is anger. You get, people think you're a kook, and people get mad at you, and you can't have any friends. But anger internalized is depression. I don't know which is worse. Both of them are kind of bad. Do you understand that? Do you understand anger internalized?
Sure.
You agree?
For ages.
Huh?
I had it for ages, haven't I?
Yeah.
Because I wanted, I didn't feel like I got what I should have had.
Yeah.
So I was depressed.
Now, when your self depends on what you, when your sense of self depends on what you can acquire, then greed reveals itself when desire is frustrated. So, and it's greed is sneaky because it sneaks up on you. You may not.
Jealousy.
Yeah. It's like, but it's like it has to have.
It's got to be resistance before you can feel it.
But it's got to have an expression. So, but if you have enough, like around here, if there's enough peer pressure, like with the Levites, right? where Harry knows that, you know, that he's only going to get $80 a week, right? So, I mean, it's really kind of silly to be greed for, to get stuff if you're making $80 a week. But then greed reveals itself in a, it's the same being or beast, but it reveals itself in proprietariness. It's the idea that, you know, it reveals itself in your dealings with.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So you got anger and greed, and they're working based on compulsions, and they're all doing one thing. They're all doing one thing to try to get you to avoid looking. You know, they don't want you, anger and greed never want you to look to the right or to the left. They don't want you to look at Gehenna, and they certainly, well, then you can't see heaven. And so,
building your own tunnel.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's just coin. It's like, you remember, it's like our, the reason that everything in the universe is on a, is runs on centrifugal force, and it's on a pole, like the earth revolves around on a pole, and the planets and everything goes around, is to show us a mystery. That if God, to be centered, means to be on and in the pole, so that everything around you is circling. But you neither look to the right nor to the left. If you look to the, you know, in one case, if you look to the right, it's good. If you look to the left, it's evil. If, you know, if you look to the left, it's greed. If you look to the right, it's anger. I mean, that's not where we are. That's not what we're about. We're about to be so centered that the destruction of the universe itself, our identity is that pole. That's why the ancients always believed that wherever they were was the center of the universe. That's not an egomaniac condition. That's a statement of this reality, that if everything in the universe is revolving around you, that means that you don't ever have to be in that, never have to have the shadow of turning. That's what the wind is caused by, the rotation, and the wind has but one function, and that's to blow off the chaff in this threshing floor. The real you is centered. It can never be affected by the wind.
Yeah, see, it falls at the vortex and rests on the floor. It's the chaff that's spinning around it.
Right. Now, the chaff looks, and it sort of intuits, it knows it's separate. It knows it's nothing but death. And so if your identity is the chaff, you certainly don't want to look at Gehenna, and you have no right to look at Jerusalem. Now, the seed, the Christ in you, that component, in order for it to see Jerusalem, must first look at Gehenna. Not just look, but experience it. Yeah. Am I communicating?
Mm-hmm. It sounds a little bit, that reminded me of the thing about the, when the flower, is it the flower that's blanched or the seed that's in the pans over the fire?
It's the seed for the, that ends up being the offering, yeah. Now, the answer of the scriptures to this is be transformed by the renewing of your mind.
That's one of the works that I want to do after the Michael show. I want to call it Portrait of the Artist's Mind as a Rabid Dog. Because I'm at that point where it's like my mind talks constantly and it says nothing but trash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are moments when I feel like there's a certain transformation there, but most of the time it's just a plea for transformation.
Amen. Now, the desert experience, solitude, is the furnace of that transformation. Doesn't mean, like, when Bloom, I talked to Bloom for like for 8 years, right? He finally started thinking. Then Bloom all of a sudden decided he was going to quit everything and go to the desert. That's where he was going to get it right. The desert, you don't have to go anywhere. The desert is there if you just see it. Now, that's why Christ was tempted in the desert, in this solitude. And he has temptation with the three temptations of the world and the three temptations of your world. Be relevant, be spectacular, and be powerful. Now, those words are power words, but in your own domain, those are the three temptations. Now, you got to get into solitude, finally, once. You got to experience solitude. Now, the reason that the human race has gone like they have with all the little developments in technology, et cetera, because Satan is the god of this world, they are structuring, the universe is being structured cosmically to prevent solitude. That's why radios and television were invented. That's why books and movies were invented. That's why, you know, all of this stuff is going on to prevent you from experiencing solitude. That's why the Bible was invented, to prevent you from experiencing solitude. I mean, I see you. You come in, I know your head is in Guam and your feet are in Alaska and you're, who knows where the rest of you is, and you sit down, well, I'm going to get out of this by reading the Bible. Well, that's the ticket. You understand?
Yeah.
But the Bible is just a bunch of bullshit. It's just a bunch of words. It's just like, you know, some punk rock group down here. Unless you see. It's the most oversold book in the universe. Nobody understands it. They just sort of sit around and read it and see what they can get from it. What?
I was just thinking if I took that out of context.
Well, I don't care what you take it and where you take it. It's the truth. He will, probably will. You'll get mad at me one day and you'll take all the outtakes.
Have you ever done that before?
Only what about this?
Now, solitude is not privacy. Privacy is simply a time and a place for yourselves where we are not bothered by other people, where we can think, where we can think our own thoughts, just sort of get alone. We can repeat our mantras.
We can play the stereo wheel out.
You understand? That's not solitude, that's privacy.
I was afraid of that.
What? What is solitude? Solitude. : No friends to talk to. No telephone. No meetings. No music. No books. No radio. No VCRs.
No fun.
No Bible. No TV. Just me. Naked. Vulnerable. Weak. Broken. Sinful. Deprived. Depraved. An absolute no thing, a nothing, a no thing. That's solitude.
A couple of times in my life I've tried to do that. I made it a dot.
maybe
3 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, no, yeah, 20 minutes an hour. You know, maybe, you know how you build up and you're going to do that. You really, then, but once you get there, what my particular system does is it goes to it. Well, I don't really need this. You know, I've gotten all the benefit out of this, and I really can stand.
Or what normally happens is that. You go out, you try to do it, and it just doesn't work.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like Doug. Doug is always, he's going to go camping. When every time he gets in trouble, he's going to go.
The fortress of solitude.
Yeah. But in this solitude, it's a nothing so dreadful, you will do anything to avoid it.
Yeah.
You'll do anything to forget your no-thingness and believe you are something, even a bad thing.
Call that going to bed.
Now, somehow the desert experience that is between the world and the promise is the experience of solitude. The world lives their whole life as one long defense against the reality of their condition, of our condition, and the restless effort to convince ourselves that we're not in that position of solitude. That we have some virtue, even if it's a negative virtue. But Jesus did not come to call the virtuous, but he came to call those that knew they were in that condition. It's the only one he calls. Now, the danger of the solitude position is extremely real. You risk suicide. It is the struggle of the flesh to keep from dying to its false self. And you will commit suicide before you will die to the false self. Understand? The struggle is far beyond our own strength. Those who fight the demons of the desert in their own strength are fools. The wisdom of the desert is that the confrontation with our own frightening nothingness forces us to once and for all to surrender in supplication, unconditionally, totally, to God. Then a mystery takes place. Christ is revealed in us. That's the meaning of the cross. Now I'm going to show you that the 12th labor of Hercules and the initiates in the Eleusinian mysteries saw the cross. Now, in that solitude, we slowly come to the realization that it is not we who live in any part of us, but Christ who lives in us and as us, that he is our own true self. He is the one that you meet when you meet you. We can let all those compulsions melt away with all the false ties to the world. And then we begin to truly live. And we look back and see separateness and anger and greed hanging on the cross. Because we look back and we see us on the cross. Now the mystery is, when Rex looked at that drawing, he saw something different than when I looked at it. When I looked at the drawing, I saw Christ. Believe it or not, when I look at you, most of the time, I see Christ. But you have to know that. Now, where is your solitude? Where's your desert? Doesn't take long, because he's redeemed the time. That one moment can be 40 years. And you can do what Lee experienced today. You can neglect the past. You press toward the mark of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus, neglecting those things that are behind. Now you're ready to study the Eleusinian mysteries.
I'm a little sure it's Elysian.
It's Elysian?
I think so.
Elysian. Spell. It's Eleusian.
Elysian.
It's Elysian.
Well, I mean, you're putting like 3 or 4 syllables in the answer.
Well, I did it. I can never pronounce anything right.
Well, it's only through the molasses filter.
What?
Only through the molasses filter.
No, I'd like to be able to speak really good and know all the words right and everything, but I don't,
I
so fuck
that.
It.
I was just saying that one word.
It's one of these rabbis from Galilee that can't pronounce the words right and everybody makes fun of them.
Rabbi Moshe.
That's where it is.
They teased him in the left.
Everybody understand?
Take a big guy.
Take a big guy.